A yoga class is full of claims, engage or bantas. This posture opens the hips. The tradition teaches us dozens of claims an hour, and almost nobody ever tells you where a single one of them came from. I'm Michael Joel Hall, and this is Ashtanga Tech. Think about that for a second. In one class you'll hear a claim about anatomy, a claim about tradition, a claim about energy, a claim about the right order to do things in, different kinds of knowledge, from wildly different sources, and they all get delivered in exactly the same tone of voice, flat, certain. This is how it works. Full stop. Here's the test I want you to carry into every room. When a teacher says the tradition says, ask which tradition, which text, which teacher. If they can't answer, they're not citing tradition, they're borrowing its authority, and those are not the same thing. Let me describe the old model, because most of us were trained inside it without noticing. The teacher knows things, the student absorbs things, no citations, no difference between a peer-reviewed study of the spine and something the teacher happened to feel during practice last Tuesday. Personal experience gets handed to you as universal truth. This worked for me quietly becomes this works for everyone, always. The traditional claims arrive without a text, the science claims arrive without a study, and everything lands with the same weight, no matter how much is actually holding it up. Now, some students see right through that. The academics, the lawyers, the researchers, anybody trained to ask where's your source, to them, a room where nothing gets cited reads as either a sloppiness or hiding something, and everybody else, the ones who weren't trained that way, they're left with a terrible choice, believe all of it, or believe none of it. Neither one of those makes you a better practitioner. So here's the move. You separate the claims into their kinds, and you name the kind out loud. There are really three. The first is a science claim, something about the body, the biomechanics, the physiology. According to Stuart McGill's research on the spine, that's verifiable. There's a study. You can name it, and a student can go read it. The second is a traditional claim. The Yoga Sutras say this, in this verse, according to this commentator, that's a text. You can cite the text, the line, and the person who interpreted it. The third is an experimental claim. In my experience, with hundreds of students, this tends to happen. That one's real too, but you label it. Your experience is genuine data. It's data about you. Say so. Three kinds of claim. Three different sources, and the whole discipline is just refusing to blur them. Now, this sounds like a lot of work. It is, at first, because to cite everything, you actually have to know where your own knowledge comes from, and you have to be honest about the places where you don't know. People treat that as a weakness. It's the opposite. Watch what changes when you cite everything. Your students can check you. They can weigh the evidence themselves. They can tell the difference between a careful review of the research and a single good story. They can pull a thread that interests them and follow it out of the room. In other words, they stop being believers and start being thinkers, and the authority quietly moves off of you and onto the evidence. You go from being the oracle to being the curator, the person who gathers the good sources and helps people read them. That is a better job. I promise you it's a better job. And here's the part that scares teachers most. I don't know is a legitimate answer. So is the evidence is mixed. So is let's figure it out together. I have watched students trust a teacher more, not less, the moment the teacher admitted the edge of what they knew. Certainty about everything is not reassuring. Past a certain point, it's a warning sign. Let me deal with the obvious objection. Doesn't this disrespect parampara, the traditional passing of knowledge from teacher to teacher? No, and it's worth understanding why. Parampara was a verification system. Your teacher's teacher vouched for your teacher. There was a chain of credibility running all the way back to the source, and it worked beautifully. In a specific setting, small communities, stable ones, direct relationships that ran for decades. Everybody knew who trained whom. That is not the world we live in now. We learn from teachers we've never met, through books, through videos, inside a giant global industry that blends lineages together without ever saying so. You cannot verify a chain of transmission in that world. The chain is broken by the way we actually learn now. So we need a different tool for the same job, and that tool is direct citation. Naming your source, that's not abandoning parampara. It's honoring what parampara was for, and admitting it needs a new form. Then there's the mystical stuff, samadhi, the subtle body, energy. And I want to be careful here. because there are two easy ways to get this wrong. One is to sneer at it, dismiss it as nonsense, and step on the real lived experience of people who've had it. The other is worse, treating a mystical experience as though it were established medical fact. That's how you get someone told that a breathing technique will cure their disease. That's not harmless. People get hurt. The honest move is to label the domain. Some practitioners report this, the traditional texts describe it, you might feel something like it, or you might feel nothing, and both are fine. Your experience is valid in its own domain. We just can't make a scientific claim out of it. Say all of that plainly and you've dishonored no one and endangered no one. Now here's where this gets deeper than citations, because tracking your sources trains a subtler thing. Call it knowledge about your own knowledge. You're in a forward fold. You believe it's stretching your hamstrings. Fine. Where did that belief come from? An anatomy class. A teacher who said so once. The sensation itself. And is that sensation actually a hamstring stretch? Or are you reading it through a framework you swallowed years ago and never examined? That habit, watching where a belief came from while you're in the middle of using it, is the thing that keeps a person out of dogma, and it does not stay on the mat. It follows you into every room you walk into for the rest of your life. Let me make it concrete with a couple of situations you'll actually face. A student asks why you do standing poses before or seated ones, and the honest truth is, you learned it from your teacher and you've never read a reason for it. So say exactly that. My teacher sequenced it this way. It's standard in traditional Ashtanga, and I don't have a biomechanic citation for why. If you find one, bring it to me. You cited what you knew. You named what you didn't. That's the whole skill. Second one. You want to teach that backbends open the heart. And there's a student in the back with a science background whose eyebrow is climbing. Don't retreat and don't bluff. Split it into its kinds, out loud, traditional language calls these heart openers. Anatomically, they extend the upper spine and stretch the chest, and some people report an emotional release, which is experimental, not anatomical. Three claims, three sources, everybody in the room just got smarter, including the skeptic. Here's the takeaway I want to leave you with. When you make your sources visible, authority moves off of the person and onto the evidence. And your students start building the one thing that actually matters, their own capacity to judge a claim, which means they can learn without you, and they can teach after you. That was always the point. Not disciples, practitioners who no longer need you. If a teacher who won't tell you where their claims come from is on your mind, text the word agentic to 202-816-5612, and you'll reach a real coach, a person, not a bot, less guru, more you.